Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. So today I'm delighted to be joined by Michelle. Welcome to the show, Michelle. Thank you very much for making time for us today. I really appreciate
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
So Michelle is actually the mum of Zach. And Zach was on the show back earlier in the year, and it was a great show. I really loved it. I really loved Zach's take as an adoptee, and yeah, Michelle is his mum, and kindly agreed to come on the show because you're saying that you don't do many interviews anymore.
I really don't. I'm kind of more behind the scenes, and Zach and Michael run the agency, and I'm very proud of where they are today, and that I actually have the luxury of being behind the scenes.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you set up the agency and adopting Zach and his brothers and sisters? I'm sorry, I can't remember how many there
There's
are.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah. But just a little bit about yourself, please, Michelle. That'd be great.
It was really the experience that my husband and I had in becoming parents by way of adoption in the 1980s. And Zach made us parents, I think 34 years ago, and our anniversary of becoming parents is actually next week. I was a teacher, and my husband was working at a business. And the experience of being a white couple adopting a Black child was very different for many agencies and many attorneys that we contacted in those years. And I became very overwhelmed by the fact that it just something that they felt was not possible. And when we succeeded in adopting and became adoptive parents, I realized that so many birth mothers, especially Black women who wanted the choice of adoption for their child, that they were told basically the same thing, that they were basically told there's no family for your child. Zach's birth mother was told that she had the option of foster care. And when we learned that, I didn't understand why did she get foster care as her only option, take home the baby or put the baby in foster care, where other women were had the option of adoption, and not only had that option, they had the ability, because in the 80s, they started talking about something called open adoption. And I have that in air quotes right now, and because that was scary and so unknown in that time. And that just meant in those days that you have a choice of adoptive families and you can look at profiles. So I was, while very thrilled to be a mom by way of adoption, I was really stressed that there were so many women that were not given the choices that I felt that they should be given. And so I entered the adoption field. My husband literally said, you either adopt another child, you write a book about the experiences, or start an adoption agency. Of course, when he said start an adoption agency, he meant that as a joke. I took that very seriously. And my first agency was where we lived. It launched in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We became licensed in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And we predominantly were an agency that worked with Black women, giving them choices of adoption rather than foster care, so they can make a voluntary choice and to explore what became very known as open adoption in the true sense of the word. As the years went on, I ended up leaving and coming home to New York State, where by then we had 5 children. And I, many years later, started an agency, the one that Zach and my son is the associate director of today, called Adoption Star. The main office is in Buffalo, New York. That agency, being licensed in 3 states now, has been around for 21 years. And that is the agency that I recently, it's been a year that I've taken a step back in a semi-retirement stage, and I am now a consultant. So my favorite title, in addition to mom, is that I'm a founder of Adoption Star, but I'm no longer a director of the organization.
Wow. And so Zach's 34, right?
Yeah. Zach's turning 34, correct.
Yeah, Zach's 34. And your youngest? How old is your youngest?
21.
21.
So right. we have 10 children, many who joined our family by way of adoption. And I really went through the experience all the way our family experienced infant adoption, special needs adoption, adoption that disrupted in another family's home and where our family adopted the child. And then our last adoption was of a teenager.
Right. Wow. Yeah,
so we've definitely experienced lots of different things. I am not the adoptive mom that I was 34 years ago. I'm not the adoption professional I was 34 years ago. I really feel that this experience has been life-changing. I think my children, I know, Simon, that my children taught me more about adoption than I could have learned anywhere else. But as an adoption professional and as an adoptive mom, it's something that you can't have your mindset of where you were 34 years ago. So much has changed. And it's really important to listen to all the people that are touched by adoption because they all didn't have the same experience.
So what are the most significant things that have changed then?
I'm going to answer that, but I'm going to tell you, I still think it needs to change. I feel that the adoption field, let's say, is mostly run by and the voices that you mostly hear are that of adoptive parents. And I think adoptive parents, we need to hear that. If you look statistically, especially in the United States, about adoption, the adoption agencies, they're founded often by people like me, those of us who are adoptive parents. I feel that the voices that we hear all the time of in adoption are those of us, whether we're lawyers or founders of agencies, we're adoptive parents. And we can be as open-minded and as sensitive to all the voices, but we're not the voice of the adoptee. We're not the voice of the birth parent, and we never can be. And I think that that was the first thing that I needed to learn and that I want to continue to see happen, that it's, I'm not opposed to, an adoptive parent running an adoption agency, not at all. I'm not opposed to hearing adoptive parent voices. I just think adoptive parents, we need to realize that is we are the loudest voice and we need to change that and reverse that.
Yeah. And in terms of your learnings on, so if we take the professional hat off slightly for a minute and put your kind of like adoptive mom hat on, what are the most significant learnings? You said, I'm not the adoptive mom. I'm not the mom that I was 34 years ago. What have been the most significant learnings for you over that time, or the changes that you've seen in yourself, or that you may be seeing more now that you have a little bit more time for perspective? I don't know.
I can answer that both as a mom in general and then as an adoptive mom. As a mom in general, the joke in the family is having 10 children is Zach still is not allowed to ride his bike in the street. Because I was so that kind of parent, scared of everything with my first few children. And so a mom in general, obviously with having so many children, you learn that it's okay. They could ride their bike in the street, at a certain age. and you can trust that they'll be safe. But as an adoptive mom, there's so many things. One thing would be open adoption that I referred to moments ago. When I first heard about open adoption, my husband came home from an adoption conference and told me about it. And I actually, honest truth, I actually thought he couldn't love Zach as much as I could because he proposed opening Zach's adoption and getting to know who his birth family was. Zach was only turning two at that time. And I just couldn't believe it. I felt so threatened. And I kept a journal during those times and reading it and looking back, I mean, part of it, I want to laugh. And the other part I want to cry is, why was I so scared? And it really was all about me. And it had to become all about Zach. And I had to understand that my husband loved him so much because he really wanted to give Zach this gift. And luckily, I listened to him, and luckily I educated myself. And that first year from age 2 to age 3 was a big change. We used to go to McDonald's, and I would let Zach play on the, they had the indoor playground, and his birth mother and birth grandmother would come visit. And within 1 year later, Zach's third birthday, they were all in our apartment in Philadelphia, and we all celebrated together. And they met my family, and I met their family. And that's really when our life became intertwined to this very day. Though we've certainly had, just like any relationship, there are moments of where we didn't hear from each other. Social media over the years has made it really wonderful, because we have the easier way of connecting and keeping up to date with how our lives have went on. But in the olden days, we had to really write letters or make phone calls, those kinds of things that had to be more of a commitment, especially when we left that geographic area that they lived in.
Yeah. I recorded a podcast earlier today, and we were talking about connection and birth parents. The idea that popped into my head as I was talking, so I was talking to an adoption professional who's not an adoptive mum, and I set out the thing that came into my head was kind of overthinking to worrying, to anxiety, to being scared, to abject terror. Mm-hmm. About the idea of, so these are the feelings that I could see go through me and could easily flush through an adoptive parent who is concerned about.
Oh, absolutely.
So you said scared. You said you were scared.
Oh, I had nightmares. I actually had remember a nightmare in particular that we had met Zach's birth mother on the day that we met Zach. And it was beautiful. And I've written about it, and she and I have talked about it. It was absolutely beautiful. I thought that was the greatest gift. And I had no issue sharing pictures and keeping the agency updated to keep her updated. But that idea of actually, best way I can describe it, to become extended family members, and for her to be so much in his life as exactly who she is, was very threatening. I had a nightmare that, she ran off with him and that type of thing. And again, to tell you what's very interesting, is if you interviewed her, I think she would say the same thing. I remember when he was 13 years old, it was his bar mitzvah. And we were, she came to town, and she, came with her children that she was raising, and she was a part of it. And we actually had time for the first time in years, just she and I, to really talk mother to mother. And she shared for the very first time a lot of the emotions of what that experience was. And by then, I was an experienced adoptive mom, an experienced adoption professional. So the things that she shared weren't shocking to me, though, of course, it's much more painful hearing it from someone. But she really made it clear that she's always seen us as his parents. And that despite the grief and the loss that she went through, that she felt that it was the right decision. And she also talked about very early on being very threatened about open adoption. I remember one of the first things that her mother said to us when we talked about trying to open the adoption was, "What's wrong? Do you want to return him?" And we were like so scared and shocked. Why would you say that? Because you got to remember that term was so foreign. Why would we write them a letter and ask the agency to pass it and have our phone number in? Why would we? What do we want from them? They were so scared. So again, that's what I think the story about, we always hear it from adoptive parent perspectives of how threatened we were. But think about it. And I know from our agency at Adoption Star, not all women call and say that they want to explore an open adoption. Number one, they might not have even heard the term. Number two, that feels very threatening. They don't know. Some women have said that they've dropped out of having an open adoption because they're not proud of, you know, maybe they told the adoptive parents that they were going to go to college, let's say, for an example, and maybe they didn't go to college. And then they said they're embarrassed that they didn't do what they said they were going to do. So they kind of weed themselves out of an open adoption. And that's so sad. And so she was just as frightened as we were. And she had as many fears as we did, and maybe even more so because she was more vulnerable and didn't have as much support, and we had each other. So the process, we kind of learned the process together. I'm so grateful that we all did, and we were all willing to do that because we all did that because what adoption is supposed to be about is the child. And so we did that on behalf of the child. Now all of our children who have an open relationship, they have to carry that relationship themselves. It's their responsibility. My husband and I have our own relationships with some of our children's birth families, but not all of our adult children have maintained those relationships because that's up to them. We felt that we were going to give that to them, that we believed that we would do that. So after Zach, we have identifying information, I should say. I can't say we have open adoptions with everything because not all birth families want that, but we have identifying information for all of our children and the families that we kept in touch with. Now that not all my adult children have made the decision to keep in touch with the birth families.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fear. Yeah. So mine was a closed adoption, right? Because that's the way it was done in the 60s. And my mum and dad were told that nobody would know. Nobody would be able to find out, and I wouldn't be able to find out anything. But then they changed the law in the 70s here in the UK. About 8 years ago, I got my original birth certificate with my birth mother's name on it, and I decided not to go any further, to find out. But I was in a therapist chair. A couple of years later, and the idea of my birth mother, the therapist was talking about the birth mother, and the idea of her being outside the room, the therapist room, and me opening the door popped into my head, and an idea of her rejecting me. And I was gripped for a split second by incredible fear. Mm-hmm. And then the fear went into anger and like pig-headed determination that I'm not going to let this fear stop me. Well, I'm not going to let this fear not ruin my life, but I'm not going to let this fear live with me and stop me doing it. I need to kind of rush headlong into it, and then I decided to resume my search for her. So the fear thing is incredible, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's anyone who's a parent certainly knows fear. We live fear. We're fearful for everything. Like I use that example about riding your bike in the street. It's anything as little as that to, life decisions or illnesses or any things that you think that, oh my goodness, what I might do, what might, really change the trajectory of what our child's success or anything. So I think fear is definitely there. And then when you add something new or different to a family who doesn't have the previous experience with it, it's often rejected just because they don't want to learn more about it because it sounds scary.
Yeah. Yeah. When you were mentioning the Zach not being able to ride the bike in the street, the thing that popped straight into my head was the fact that I'm 54, right? So I've got 20 years on Zach. my mum tells me to drive carefully.
Of course. Every time when a kid say goodbye, love you, drive carefully. Yeah. Absolutely.
And she has pretty good reason, actually, because I have had a few car smashes.
So oh, no.
I've never been hurt. Luckily, I've never been hurt.
Thank goodness.
Cars have been hurt.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
So she's got kind of cause for this. But yeah, fear. Have you heard that saying that fear is the absence of love? Have you heard that?
Mm-mm, I haven't.
Or fear is the absence of love, or fear is the opposite of love.
Interesting.
So, you know, the opposite of love isn't hate, it's fear. So, you know, when you said, when you were scared about opening it up, and then there was a shift, some shift went on for you, and you said it's about Zach, it's not about me. So it's not about my fear, it's about my love for Zach. The thing that popped into my head was a little metaphor that I heard from somebody a few months ago, where, you know, if we open the door to a dark room, the light rushes in rather than the dark rushing out. And the fact that letting the darkness is actually the absence of light, and the fear is the absence of love.
That makes sense, absolutely.
And what we're all about is love, right?
I hope so. I want to tell you something that's also, I mean, love is, you know, when I see phrases or especially during this month and National Adoption Awareness Month, and you see like adoption equals love, I kind of bristle when I see that. Because again, I just feel that's just too simplistic. Zach actually teaches a class and he talks about four main things related to adoption, and he talks about adoption and love as one of those four things. And he talks about the fact that when we adopt our parents, when we raise children, we often make the mistake by making it very simplistic and telling an adoptee that their birth parent made the choice to place them for adoption because they loved them. And we know that there is so much love that's there and behind that. So I don't want anyone to misinterpret that I don't feel that. But think about a young child hearing that. And every day you're telling your child you love them. We hope you are. It's a million times a day, right? You love them. And yet you told them so simplistically and very quickly that they were placed for adoption because someone loved them. I've heard from so many adoptees over the years that they grew up in a fear that when will their parents place them for adoption? Maybe adoption is not forever. And so he has a dialogue with these, and the class that he runs is specifically for prospective adoptive parents. And this, and really talks about, you know, being careful about choosing some of those little, you know, child storybooks that talk about, you know, your birth parent loved you and that's why she placed you for adoption. And then you basically were found in a cabbage patch, you know, that kind of thing, to the ones that are harder. And again, where the scary part comes in, because he challenges prospective adoptive parents to read some of these more modern children's books before they read them to their actual children, before they even adopt, because there are some really intense concepts there. There's one book that he introduces to the class and I've read before called My First Mommy Loves Me. And that makes a lot of prospective adoptive parents uncomfortable. That makes a lot of adoptive parents uncomfortable. And the book is wonderful, and it really is a story from a birth mother's perspective of why she made her adoption plan and wrote a letter to her baby. And it tells in the beginning, it has a note to parents: if you don't want to use the term first mommy, you don't need to. You need to use what term your family is comfortable with. Is it birth mother? Is it, is it her first name? Is it, whatever, but to really have those conversations. And I think those classes should be mandatory to have, because I think the class is actually called Talking About Adoption. And it's really about the very first ways of, talking about adoption and making it really, really, important to have those conversations that you're uncomfortable talking about. So then it doesn't become scary once you're more familiar with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's lots of these books around and we've got to pick the ones that feel right for us, but maybe challenges a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, there are many. I mean, there are ones that are more religious, for example, and we're not, I just feel that families have to be very open-minded, and that when you feel uncomfortable, I guess my philosophy, I have another son who he's my second, and he always says, do something. He challenges himself to do something he calls scary every day. And I tell him, Jordan, I do something scary every day. Just what I do every day feels scary. just being a parent or a grandparent is scary. So I feel I do that. I don't need to, eat a scorpion or do different things that he might have had experiences in his life. But I think there are some things that we do have to push ourselves out of our comfort level. If it is supposed to be about the child, which of course it's supposed to be, then we have to push ourselves out of our comfort level.
Yeah. Yeah. So where did the fear go? When did the fear go? You talked about
so quickly once I met them in person after we really proposed, let's talk more about it. They were scared and I was scared. And then the love that I felt for his birth mother the very first moment I met her, before I met him, kind of was there. And we really do not only love each other, but like each other. And we knew we're going to navigate this. Then the fear no longer was how we felt about each other. The fear really became, oh no, we have to tell our family. I mean, Simon telling my own mother that I was doing this, you have to think just generationally, So it just, I kind of just plopped it in on her basically on his third birthday. Because we knew they didn't want to talk about open adoption. She was a grandmother and I was a first time mom. Zach made her a grandmother, not me. And she just fell in love with him right away. And I think this realizing, well, someone else is a grandmother out there too, who Zach's birth grandmother came to the party on his third birthday, and his birth grandmother and his grandmother, my mother, met each other for the first time and loved each other immediately. Yeah. And it was beautiful, but I wouldn't recommend doing it necessarily the way I did it. You never know how it could go. But I just knew that if my mother probably would have never taken up on the offer to meet, because she again felt threatened but I'm his grandmother.
Yeah.
And it's the whole idea of sharing and of things like that is isn't it beautiful if there's so many people in this world that love our children? That's absolutely beautiful. There's so many people thinking about them or praying for them or hoping the best for them or there for them for whatever reason. It does not mean that everybody who loves your child is parenting your child. No, we're still the parents. And I think it's a lot about when adoptive parents are scared about it. I think it's a lot about unresolved things. I mean, you shared very honestly about, sitting in a chair at the therapist's office and talking about the things that you processed. Well, we as adoptive parents, we need to do that too. And there's what brought us to adoption. What you know, I don't want to even call it baggage, but what experiences have we had that make us fearful about certain things? And a lot of it is also is grief and loss. You know, so many have had experience with years of trying to, you know, conceive or lost pregnancies or worse. And I think that if we tell ourselves that we are this child's parent, see, I guess I never questioned that I was, you know, my children's parent. I certainly respect and know that they have other parents out there. But I also never felt that I was less of, that I was not deserving to be a parent or that I wasn't. And so I never, you know, sometimes I've heard people say, some children who are adopted aren't well disciplined. And I talked to an adoptive mom once and she goes, you know, I think that that's true. And I said, why do you think it's true? She goes, she adopted a child from China. And she goes, I always feel that her birth mother's on my shoulder and telling me, don't yell at her, don't punish her, don't do this. And I feel so guilty because she gave me the greatest gift. They don't discipline my child the way that I should. And she's running around crazy right now. And I think that that's stuff that needs to be worked on and that hopefully is worked on before you're parenting in that moment. And so I always, by the way, wanted to adopt. My main motivation wasn't an infertility or things that I know for infant adoption often is. So my husband and I always wanted to adopt, and we feel that we have a beautiful blend of a family that has come by way of adoption and by birth. Yeah. And so that wasn't there, but I do think that people need to.
I'm having trouble hearing you.
My phone thinks I'm talking to them. So, and I apologize for any background noise being working from home. We have a house we're working from home and grandchildren playing in the background. So,
you're doing great. The concentration is doing great. I'm easily distracted. My wife came in and sometimes brings me a cup of tea when I'm on a Zoom. And she said, You look at me and you look at me like, da, 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 you know, I'm just bringing a cup of tea. I said, no, I'm just, you just shocked me. You just surprised me. You just scared me.
I just did that with someone who came in too. I'm like, what was that?
I mean, you talked about baggage and you said you didn't really want it, you know, you weren't even sure to call it that. Did a great episode with a fellow foster, an adoptive mom and adoption professional by the name of Holly Ann Petrie. And she came up with this title of Unpacking Our Baggage as Adopted Parents. And that's one of the episodes from a couple of months back, which is interesting to look at. If you're, this is just an aside, I'm just talking to the listeners now rather than you. If you're listening okay. If that sounds like it's you, then have a dip into that. I also just released today an episode, and it's called The Impact of Infertility. Now, clearly, you didn't come up to adoption through infertility, but some people do. And there's a great interview that I did with a lady called Erica Schmidt about that. So those are just some asides. I want to take it right back to the fear thing, though, because I think that, you know, it's the biggest thing in all our lives, you know, whatever it is that we're afraid of, whether that's, and I'm meaning that it's not just COVID, you know, we're afraid of our son and his bad driving or Zach on his bike or COVID or whatever, you know, whatever. Uh-huh. And you know, like one of the things I heard last year that really rang true for me is like, we can't solve a problem in our head. We can't think our way out of a problem. You know, an answer comes to us often. An answer or a solution comes to us, you know, like when we're slept on it, or it goes in experience. So you said, like, the fear went as soon as you felt the love from Zach's birth mum, you know? We live in this world that's kind of obsessed with mindset hacks and you know, all this neuro-linguistic programming, and you know, we've got to all this. Yeah, it's and like we can think our way out of stuff. And it, I think I would have, if it did work, it would have worked for me because I gave that stuff a pretty good shot, right? this stuff comes through experience, and I thought, you know, it's a beauty that you expressed it beautifully. The fear when the love came in, and the love came in when when you met them, and you, like, so if people are afraid of stuff listening to this, then don't do what Simon tried to do, right? And think his way out of that fear, you know.
I think also, you know, it is about thinking, and I'm, you know, the queen of overthinking, you know. Also, I think also when we think so much, it's really a control thing sometimes, you know. It's that you can't control a scenario because you have to experience to know what it's going to be. You know, you had the fear that you shared about being rejected. And if she was on the other side of that door, and you don't know, I wouldn't, you know, how it was going to go, and you can't control that. We can control how we react to things, but we can't control what someone else is going to do. And I think that with that whole thing with adoption, because it isn't one-sided, and there are so many people that are involved in so many lives that are being affected. You know, Zach's birth mother had her feelings, but Zach's birth grandmother had her own feelings. They were always, by the way, not always in mind. And it's, you know, it's the same thing I told my children when Zach gravitated to entering the adoption field. It's nothing that I ever would think that, you know, that one of my children, you know, would have done or to do. I remember being fearful of that too. Wondering how that might be, because I didn't know. I knew what life was as an adoptive parent being in the field, and feeling, like I said in the beginning of this interview, I don't think it was recorded yet, kind of eat, sleep, you know, drink, everything we do is, you know, it's kind of, it's my favorite topic, but sometimes it's my worst topic, because it's just always in your life, is how might an adoptee feel, and a transracial adoptee feel, choosing this as their career, and thinking about it and talking about it all the time. You can probably answer that, you know, because you talk about, you know, and this is what you're doing in your podcast, which is beautiful. And so I think that his voice, it so needs to be heard, and it's so beautiful that he gravitated to that. But because of the unknown, and that I had lack of control of what that would be, that becomes scary. So that's just another example. I did not know, you know, what his birth mother would really do, or how her feelings might change over the years about the open adoption relationship. And so, yes, that can become scary. But to let a fear go, because, like you said, because of a relationship, we got so much more out of those relationships to this very day. I love getting a note from Zach's birth father. Like, sometimes I'll just get a spontaneous note on social media or something like that. I love seeing the pictures that he posts about his life and his grandchildren today. Like, you know what I mean? That's so cool. And I just think that we've, you know, we ended up getting so much more than, you know, and that I feel like we waste a lot of time on our fears, you know, but it's something that I think adoption in general, we tell our adoptive parents that it's not that you feel fearful of open adoption. You're fearful of adoption, because it's just, you know, it's becoming more comfortable with what that means. Or maybe you didn't prepare for an adoption beforehand, and this is something that, you know, is now coming, and there's so much to learn. It's just taking time. We just ask people to be open-minded and to talk to so many different people, but not just people that are in the same boat as yours, not just people who are, don't, adoptive parents should not just talk to adoptive parents. I'm one of the very first adoption conferences I ever went to, I was a young mother, and the panel that I was so moved by was a panel of young adult adoptees. And I changed a lot of the ways I talk to my children after hearing what these adoptees shared. There are a lot of things I researched more after that, because it was hearing from the mouth of babes, you know, and really, really hearing about a broad range of experiences and how they felt, because my children were too young to share their feelings yet. And I wanted to make sure that they felt comfortable talking about their feelings and their experiences.
Yeah. Was there anything that you recall an example perhaps of what you took from hearing those adult adoptees speak? I'm sure listeners may.
There's several things, but one thing resonated. There's also it was a book I read, and it was the voice of a bunch of like teen adoptees. And there's one thing that almost all of them said, and it was that when they received a punishment, let's say, from their adoptive parents, that they would say in their brain, in their head, my birth parents would never punish me. My birth mother would never set me up to my room, or, you know, or something like that. And I just thought, really? Really? Do they, like, especially even those that didn't even have an open adoption? And I'm thinking, you know, so Zach was the one of the oldest at that point when I remember, and it really hit me. And I asked him that point blank. And I said, Zach, if I ever send you up to your bedroom, do you have that thought process? And he started to laugh and he goes, yes, I do. And I said, and I was shocked. I had no idea. And I'm not saying that's every adoptee's experience, but it just was something that, and we ended up having a very good dialogue about it. And when I talked to his birth mother one day on the phone, I told her the story, and she laughed so hard. And she goes, you tell Zach that that I support you, and that if you sent it up to his bedroom, I would have sent him up to his bedroom too. Yeah. And I thought that was great.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have that one.
No, that's interesting.
I feel kind of left out. Yeah. not really, no. So were there some others you said?
There are others that were heavier. That I remember one, very handsome young man that he ended up sharing about how tough as an infant adoptee, but the struggles that he had in life, substances that he abused, things that he did, a lot of loss issues of really feeling even though it was an infant adoption, and his parents, by the way, adopted several children, so he wasn't the only, you know, adoptee, just really struggles of loss that he had that his other adopted brothers and sisters just didn't experience the way he experienced, and really learning, I mean, we know this, but how many times those of us as parents need to be reminded all of our children are not the same. I've adopted children that are even biologically related, and they're still so different. My own children who are biologically related are still so different, from developmental milestones to, you know, Zach choosing to always want to talk about adoption and feel comfortable about it. But his brother, two and a half younger, that, by the way, is his half biological brother, never wanted to talk about it and dealt with issues of adoption very differently than Zach did. And I think that was something that I saw even before my children got older, by listening to adoptees explaining that. And that Zach, I think, does a good job talking about that he might have, you know, I think on your podcast alone, you talked about, you know, what your whole podcast is about, you know, positive, you know, adoptees and seeing he is such a half glass full person. And that's his personality, but there's other people born in different personalities, adopted or not. And so everybody has a right to their feelings and their story, and that even in infant adoption, there can be incredible amount of loss. And I do think you hear that a lot in older child adoption, but those of us who were adoptive parents were not pre-educated about that. And I'm talking in the earlier years, where when my husband and I adopted, we weren't required to go through classes. Today, our agency requires people who adopt infants to go through classes, but it isn't required, at least in the United States, all around. It's not uniform. And I don't feel that many adoptive parents realize, like, how can an infant go through a loss? So that is a big thing that I learned in hearing young adults talk about that.
Yeah. I think the mind is a meaning machine, and it's looking for a cause, and it's looking for a cause and effect. And in my opinion, we pin the tail on the wrong donkey most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got it's a very radical thought that's been going through my head, and I just want to try it.
Okay.
Out with you, if I may. You up for that?
Go for it. Go for it. Yeah.
I'm 100% sure of this, okay, but I'm not 100% sure of my ability to communicate it with you. And I have tried to communicate this to a few people, and I haven't got it right yet. So if we think about cause and effect, something causes something else. This is the effect. My level of security, or yeah, if you've got a scale from love, with love at one end and fear at the other one, at the other end, mm-hmm. right? So it's like a security scale, if you like. I go up and down that scale all day long.
Okay.
So my experience varies. My security varies. It's a variable thing. I was adopted 54 years ago. That's a fixed event that's happened in the past. So how can a fixed event in the past be the cause of a variable experience? Does that make sense?
I think so. I think it makes sense, but I think I'm understanding you're saying. So are you, but you're asking it in the sense of how is it possible, but yet it's possible?
Well, it isn't. Possible. I don't think it is possible. I think so. Somebody said nothing has any meaning other than the meaning that we give it.
That 100%, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I think the meaning I give adoption changes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the adoption, it's the meaning that I give it that changes.
Then I understand that, yes.
So the meaning that I give it causes a variable. The meaning causes the variability. So it's about what's going on in my head and my heart, especially in my heart. And this is life. You know, our lives are... Lives are up and down.
Right.
All our lives are up and down. Adoptees, right. Non-adoptees, birth parents, adopted parents, people's life. Everybody's life goes mm-hmm. up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And that has nothing to do with an event in the past. It has any event in the past. It has everything to do with the meaning that they're giving that. The meaning that they're giving a past event, or the level of consciousness that they're operating.
Would it be, so would this fall in line with it? Our last child that we adopted, who is an adult now, was adopted as a teenager. And she takes a very strong stand that can never use an excuse. She chooses not to, and she gets disturbed when others do that say that because I had a difficult childhood and I was in foster care for years, that that's an excuse why I'm struggling all these years later. where she looks at, no, I'm not using that as an excuse. If it's whether she's going to attach meaning to that or not, that she's not going to bring that to her current things that she's made up as a whole person, the experiences of being in our family and the experiences that she had in foster care and her birth family, but she's not using those things as an excuse to, if she struggles today in this moment.
I 100% agree with her. And I also think that she's about 1,000 times better at expressing what I said in a very roundabout, kind of left-brainy kind of way. But yeah, I mean, I think there's the two things here is we're talking about empowerment, are we? I had a business coach years ago, 15 years ago, and she talked about being above the line or below the line. And below the line is blame, excuses, and denial. And I can't remember, isn't that funny? I can't remember what was above the line. If we are empowered, you know, if we are above the line, if we're being the best that we can be, then we're definitely mm-hmm. not blaming, and we're not blaming anybody else. Mm-hmm. We're not blaming the past. We're not making excuses, and we're not in denial of our kind of responsibility, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think, she's adopted at 13. She must have had some tricky stuff, but she doesn't.
She was adopted at 16. She came 16. To our home in a foster placement right shy of her 14th birthday. So, and we never expected that we would be able to adopt. It was more like an emergency placement situation. So yes, my line to anyone, which makes sense, is anyone who's any child that is older and they're available for adoption, life before you met them had to be worse than you were told. You know, because you wouldn't be available. You wouldn't be, you know, waiting for another family. So, and no matter what's written on paper, it's really, the child sometimes you will never know everything, you know, or, you know, and it's their story and what they choose to share. But it was probably, I probably learned the most, to be quite honest with you, with older child adoption. I've been in the field for so long dealing with older child adoption, but when you go through that yourself, that's probably a whole other podcast in itself. I mean, it's a really, it's but so different, so different.
But for her to say that, I mean, it's inspirational for me.
She would be an incredible person to interview. She's amazing, articulate, beautiful, and has just unbelievable the way that she looks at the world. And after everything she's been through, it's very impressive. Very impressive. So,
if the Von Trapp family, you know, Von Trapp
family, yeah, family affair,
the Fried family, great, yes, bring her on. That would be brilliant. That would be brilliant. Because I look at the kids that adopted older, went into foster care, and then adopted older. And what they've been through, and you know, I was adopted at 5 weeks old, and I think about stuff like that, and I am aware of the privilege that is around that. But the thing that always the story I always come back to on this is the most important mentor in my life was she was abused by her dad, and she kind of like she went through the courts, and it was touch and go whether she was going to be taken from them, and she wanted to be adopted because of the stuff that mm-hmm. she was going through, and but she got through it, you know, She had some challenges in later life. She was bulimic, all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But she came through that and now inspires others. So whatever people have been through, we can get through it. You know, the way that we're built is such that we can get through it. And that brings me hope, you know, in a world that's, my little phrase I came up with a few weeks ago is let's be trauma informed but hope obsessed.
Yeah. I love that, actually. I love that. It's beautiful.
And there's hope anywhere. And you know what you shared with me about your daughter just there, about her, you know, being determined not to blame stuff. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that is one incredibly self-aware, powerful lady, for sure.
I found several very successful adoptees that were adopted, lucky enough to be adopted as older children, often are, why are they successful and why are they? It's because that was just their mind frame. I mean, if you talk to her, one of the most powerful things she ever told me is when she was a little girl, you know, not adopted, and knowing it, she just knew that there was better out there, and that she knew that there would be healthier parents and a healthier home, and that she believed that and knew that, you know. And so that is just, that's the survivor, you know. And I think that that's amazing, and that you meet so many amazing kids that are out there that are just very, it's just amazing how much you can learn from a child who goes through that experience. So,
yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. One of my favorite thoughts on this is the fact that resilience is unveiled. You know, it's experienced. Strength is experienced. We don't. What doesn't kill us makes us stronger, because it helps, but only because it helps us see how strong we all always were, mm-hmm. and yet we haven't seen it. It is unveiled. It is revealed. It's not. We've got the world telling us that it's like going to the gym, but really it's more like looking back behind the, you know, behind the curtain.
Right. I totally agree. We think we can't do these hard things. We can do them. So, yeah. Yes.
Beautiful. Well, I look forward to the third freed family member coming on the
show. I don't know if she'll appreciate that I volunteered her, exactly. Yeah, but well, you never know. You never know.
You never know. Like, don't put the thumb screws on her, right? We're not going to send a chain guy.
She's done it in the past. We did an interview with the agency during the beginning of COVID, and we were actually quarantined not together, and so it was neat. Just her and I had a dialogue all about, there was a list of questions that a group of adoptive parents created, and she and I did a dialogue back and forth, and it was really beautiful. I mean, it's really amazing for me to have the ability to listen to a podcast that you did with my son and hear his perspective of things, or listen to him, you know, give a class at the agency and hear his perspective, because though we talk so much about it and our family is so made up of adoption and those topics, it's really such a privilege and so beautiful for a parent to hear, even if they're, because there's so many things we don't even hear before. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I didn't know that's how you felt during that. Or I tell that same story, but you tell it in a different way, you know, because it's from your perspective versus my perspective. So.
Yeah. Brilliant. I need to track down that podcast. I need to listen to you and your daughter. That'd be great. The one last thought about Zach and his, and he's, you know, working in the agency as an exec director, and the career choices that he told me on the podcast about him volunteering. You know, like, he started volunteering when he was 13 or 14, coming in.
Yeah, very young. Yes.
I thought that was great, because when I was 13, I used to go into the, you know, into our, I guess, family business, you know, but I think probably 13. Yeah, I was doing things like tidying warehouses up and moving boxes, mm-hmm. you know. And when I was 10, I was hiding, you know, I was playing in the boxes. And when I was, by the time right. I was 13, I was tidying the boxes out and stuff like that. And I just thought that Zach was doing something far more meaningful, you know, than and I guess that must have shaped his, you know, that must have shaped his career choice. He must have enjoyed doing that and thought that.
Absolutely. I can just tell you, though, that the social workers, his first talk was with a group of social workers. He begged me to come to that. And he said he had a lot to say and he had a perspective. And I was outvoted. Everybody wanted him to come and he did it. And I was, and one of the things, like you said, I didn't even so much as fear. I just didn't know. I wanted to be responsible and I wanted him to be aware. And I still talk to so many people about this too, that how you feel at 12, 13, 14 years old is not how you might feel at 22 years old. How you feel at 22 is not how you might feel at 32, you know, or things. And so I wanted him to know, just because mom chose this as a career and this is what mom does, this is what mom says, it doesn't mean that that's how that has to shape, that you have to, you know, make your own way, you know, with this. And I think he certainly has. And like I said, I would never have predicted outside of being a volunteer speaker that he'd be, you know, where he is. And so much so that just recently he was asked to keynote speak at a big adoption conference, you know, in New York City. It's going to be virtual, but it's you know, it's incredible. And I'm so looking forward to hearing him speak. So it's, so I'm very proud mom.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Michelle. It's been a
thank you so really much. Enjoyed. I really appreciated the conversation.
Thanks a lot, listeners, and we'll speak to you soon. Thanks.